Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hello. Thank you for going to the Les Schwab Twires.
Twires?
I don't know. Hello. We appreciate you going to the Les Schwab.
Why can't you say tires?
Vive Clicquot. It's the same
thing. Just say tires.
Where do we pick up from? Hi, everyone. You're listening to the Sinner and the Saint podcast. I'm Luke Anderson.
I'm Will Darkins, and this is sponsored by Les Schwab Tires. Is that right?
I think so.
Okay.
Yep. Enjoy.
Doing the right thing since 1952.
In 2014, a failed stand-up comic entered a contest called The Hunt for the Host. He did not win. Later, he was joined by an underperforming Oregon State fullback with a community college degree. These men, neither having earned the position and possessing no real skills, continue on as radio personalities. If you have nothing better to do on a Saturday morning, and if you can find them, maybe you can hear The Sinner and the Saint. Starring Luke Anderson.
We got a lot of gentlemen's clubs. Oh. How do you like those? Oh, hey, everybody.
Mickey Mouse now.
It is now. Devolved into that.
And Will Darkins.
Ear or eye?
Where do you want it?
On 1080 The Fan.
Welcome to Hour 2 of The Sinner and the Saint. If you missed anything from Hour 1, we went through all of the playoff matchups and told you with 100% certainty everything that will happen. So if you don't want to watch the playoffs, save yourself a little time. Go back and download the podcast at 1080thefan.com.
Or if you're thinking of putting money on it.
Is that Australian?
You know, yeah, that wasn't executed well, was it?
Jeez.
I tried to be... bookie mobster,
gambler guy.
I tried to be bookie mobster, and then it ended up as Paul Hogan.
If you'd like to get out there and place some wages on it,
you owe me a grand. Don't make it get messy, mate.
That's not a bet. This is a.
No? This is a bet.
Yeah, no,
that's a knife. What the hell was the obsession with that guy?
What do you mean?
I don't know. Like, why was that
a national treasure?
Yeah, but why was that a thing? Why did they make movies of it?
Do you know how Paul Hogan got his start?
I don't know. What, he killed a gator?
No, same way what's her name? Kirstie
Alley?
Kirstie Alley. Game show.
What?
Yeah, game show led to success. So Kirstie Alley showed up on Match Game.
I thought she got successful out of Cheers.
Well, she did. That was her first big break, but she moved out to L.A., and she was an interior designer or a makeup artist or something like that. She showed up on Match Game, and everyone went, wow, you have a real star quality about you. She got an agent after she showed up as a contestant on Match Game, and then she, shot her way to stardom, and then she became, an overweight party hostess.
So that's how Paul Hogan?
Paul Hogan was on an Australian game show, and he was, smart-mouthing back to the host. And everybody's like, this guy's fantastic. He was like Ken Jennings with a personality. And then they're like, hey, we should put this guy in stuff. And they did. And then they made Crocodile Dundee, and he looked decent enough wearing just a vest.
He did.
So they made a bunch of them.
He basically made it attractive to have a hairy chest.
No, I think that was the time.
I think he started that.
You ever see Albert Brooks without his shirt on? They did that in the 80s, too.
I think that guy has hair everywhere. Yeah, but it started with Paul Hogan. Yeah,
not at all.
It did.
No.
Paul Hogan led the evolutionary chain of people finding hairy chests attractive.
Elliot Gould was a superstar, and he was all hair. It went his whole neck was hair, just ran right into his chest.
I'm talking about the chest, though. I think people liked his neck.
His neck hair is what made him a star?
Yeah.
I don't know, buddy. I think you're a little bit off on that. But, you have your Paul Hogan posters on the wall, so I can't say you're wrong.
Don't make this a difficult situation.
That is such a terrible accent.
Beat your knees in.
Yeah. All right.
Now it sounds British.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't sound like anything. It just sounds like you pretending to be somebody you're not poorly.
I'm the bookie bulldog.
Bookie bulldog?
Yeah, that's what they call me.
What is it going to take this weekend for you to turn on any portion of the Masters?
Mm. if somebody, and I've said this before, don't you remember?
I don't know. I don't remember anything you said.
We were talking about the British Open. If Tiger Woods hits a ball and it veers off onto the beach, he goes down there.
Okay, so Augusta is landlocked.
Okay,
that'll be important to know for this.
Well, just let me explain.
Okay,
so Tiger Woods.
Now I remember exactly what you're going
to
say.
So you asked me the same question.
In the woods.
You asked me this same question in reference to the British Open. You go, hey, what in any part is going to make you watch the British Open? And I go, okay, here's the only way. Tiger Woods hits, ball veers off onto the beach. He goes down. It's a nude beach. Somebody locks eyes with him. It triggers him. He gets in on some hippie love thing going on.
Yeah, there's a nude drum circle happening down on the beach where he slices his ball.
Yeah, and he sees it. The CBS cameras have followed him. They're great guys.
Yep.
They get down there. They're filming the whole thing live.
It's important to know in this scenario, listeners, that the cameramen are great guys.
Yeah, they are great guys. Okay. Well, they're able to climb down that damn hill.
They're willing to because they're thinking something might happen.
Sure.
Plus, they came out early to scout the location, and they went, hey, there's a naked drum circle down there. If somebody hooks the ball down there, that's going to be awesome.
So if you could get a naked drum circle anywhere near Augusta and Tiger Woods happens by it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll turn it on.
Yeah. And a lady with flowers in her hair, they make eye contact, birds start to chirp, the azaleas are in bloom, the whole thing happens.
And it's still whispering as we play-by-play it.
It's now, whisper Jim
now
Nance.
Tiger is taking his pants off. he's on the prowl.
Tiger is on the prowl. That's the only way you're watching. There's nothing. Tiger Woods in the final pairing tomorrow doesn't do anything for you.
Not really, because I've heard this so many times before, and this keeps happening, and I still hold my opinion that Tiger Woods will never win another major. I just don't think he will. His time has passed. The field is way too crowded with great players right now.
Into today, the five players leading, so tied for the best score after two rounds, all five have major victories under their belt.
Yeah, you have a guy like Brooks Koepka, Adam Scott, and then most of all, the guy I would worry about is Jason Day, because this is what Jason Day does.
Yeah.
He hangs around long enough, and then on the last day, he just friggin' wins the tournament.
He hurt his back picking up his kids. He's not even supposed to be playing well. The hardest thing for him this weekend has been putting the ball on the tee.
Yeah, he's working through adversity.
But swinging a golf club and leading a major, no big deal.
It's adversity.
Yeah, he's doing just fine. All right. Tomorrow, you've got the Blazers game at 12:30. What's going to make you turn it off and watch anything else?
Ooh, nothing, actually.
Okay.
I'll watch that entire game, and I have no problem with it, because either way it goes, I'm wanting to check it out. Now, I came many times last year very close to bouncing from that game one against the Pelicans.
Yep.
Like, very close, because it was just awful play. And the reason being is because there never seemed to be a point where the momentum swung. You just always kind of felt like New Orleans was going to win. And so I'm looking in this game. I say, hey, I want to see the momentum just be carried by Damian Lillard the entire first game. You got to go out there. You got to make a statement. And you also have to make Russell Westbrook completely frustrated by the fact that he's going to be the only guy carrying the scoring load. Paul George, like we said at the beginning, both his shoulders, talking on primetime, not ready.
Yeah. Well, I apologize for forgetting your Tiger Woods take, but I will give you credit for after game one last year of the Blazers series against the Pelicans, you had not only the correct stance, you had the most definitive stance of anybody that talks about sports. You said they're going to get swept. After one game where it was relatively close in the fourth quarter, and you said, it's over. It's absolutely over, and it was. And every game subsequently proved that more and more. The Blazers are favored in game one, but they're underdogs in the series, so we'll see what happens tomorrow. We'll talk more Blazers as we kind of wrap up the show when we get into what to watch. But we need to talk some baseball. You, non-baseball guy, have a hot take from the from the Mariners game last night that we need to discuss that apparently has nothing to do with baseball. Is that accurate?
It has something to do with baseball, just not the players.
Gotcha. All right, we'll figure that out what that is. Jen Ellis is back to talk baseball with us once again, so we will do that next. You're listening to the Sinner and Saint right here on 1080 The Fan. That's right, I still have silver chair and heavy rotation on my six-disc changer in my car.
What?
That all went way over your head. Just a millennial.
Could have been German you were speaking. What?
Do you remember CDs?
Think.
Yeah.
Those were the things you put in your computer, right? The square things?
So I have 2.5-year-old twins for any listeners that are just joining us for the first time. And I was thinking about it this week going, how many things will I have to explain to my children? There was this test done by psychologists where they put a group of young people in a room with a rotary phone and just to see if anybody could figure out how to use it. And they were putting in groups of like a dozen people at a time, wave after wave, just watching how they reacted to this piece of technology that seems, you know, not only it's obviously antiquated, but it seems, you know, I think easy enough to figure out for us that grew up with telephones. But yeah, nobody figured out how to make a phone call with that. They're like, where's the screen? What do I do? And it wasn't that they didn't understand how the physical object worked, the way they related it. They knew it was telephone, but just couldn't figure it out at all. But I'm thinking of my girls getting older and just realizing that they're going to have really no reference for most of the technology that I grew up with.
Like hang up the phone. Like would hang it up onto
give them a ring.
Cradle, yes.
As
exactly.
Y'all explained that there used to be bells in these phones and it was a thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's the developers of the iPhone are still upset that we have, you know, that they called it a phone because the device is so much more powerful, whatever. Anyways, it's time to talk baseball,
yes.
And we bring back Jen Ellis, our resident baseball expert. And I don't even know if baseball expert is a proper term. You are a super fan, Jen Ellis.
Correct.
So we are very happy to have you back. But as we do so rarely, Will has a baseball hot take or an observation that he wanted to bring up. And this will be the first time in the 4 weeks that you've been here that Will has something to contribute to this segment. So,
yeah.
Will, we'll let you kick it off and see where it takes us.
Jen, did you notice last night in the Mariners game that Ump get his arm beamed?
Oh, no. I didn't see that.
Nobody
did you say
saw it?
Beamed?
Yeah. Without the phrase,
beamed.
Right?
Beamed.
Beamed?
Yeah.
Beamed.
Like I said, beamed.
Beamed. Yeah.
So,
you didn't see that?
No.
So, there was some play where the pitcher threw wild and it just beamed the ump in the arm, and it was still a live ball. Like, you could play it. And so somebody was coming in from third to slide into home. The ump, like, goes down in pain, grabs his arm, and then, like, recollects himself really fast, gets up still holding his arm, and he looks down at the plate. And as the guy slides in, he still has his arm hanging, and he takes the working one, and he calls safe.
Safe with one arm.
One arm. And then once the play was over, he finally took his mask off and was like,
over in pain. Yeah. Oh, poor guy.
Pretty intense.
Go and just look at some of the shots that umpires take in the course of a season. You have a guy throwing it 115 miles an hour, and then a guy swinging as hard as he can, and you take a foul tip that goes back to the face mask of a guy, completely disorients him. They have a backup umpire there just in case a guy gets hurt. There's a lot of very dangerous things that happen in the game of baseball.
Have you ever been to an A's game where something like that happened?
I've seen an A's game where actually Stephen Vogt, the previous catcher for the A's, he got hit in the crotch a couple of times in one season. And one of the times, I mean, he was absolutely writhing in pain and rolling around on the ground. I mean, if you Google it, it's very painful to watch. But yeah, I was at that game and I was like, oh, God. And, you know, I mean, he was limping off the field. They had to carry him off. And he was on the disabled list for a really long time after that. But it was just,
Didn't he wear a cup?
Oh, yeah, of course. But the way it bounces.
Not of course. Pull up Yadier Molina from last year. He did not wear a cup.
Well, I mean.
He exploded part of his anatomy.
Oh, geez, man.
I believe.
But just the way it bounced, the way the ball bounced and just went right up underneath. And it was like, oh, God. I mean, it's. And they just kept showing it over and over again on the TV, him rolling around at first plate. First plate. Duh. I'm a baseball expert.
You're a baseball expert talking plate.
You've been spending too much time with me.
Yes, I know.
We brought you in to make Will smarter about baseball.
Right,
He's
I know,
making
duh.
You dumber.
Jeez.
I can still remember because I played baseball in high school, but Tom Crockett was our center fielder, so he didn't wear a cup, and he was standing behind first base in practice, and somebody, first plate,
First plate, yeah.
And one of our third basemen, threw a ball that sailed over the first baseman and caught poor Tom not looking. And I'm not even kidding. He was down for like 30 minutes.
No.
And we were pretty well convinced he was going to die.
I know. It looks like it. I mean, it's just, I can't imagine it, but I can imagine. It's just
it's still so funny,
bad.
Though. It is. Yeah. I mean, I know it's horrifying, but it's really funny when somebody gets hit in the nuts.
Yeah, it is. It actually is.
There are some baseball injuries. Who was the player for the, was it the Cardinals that climbed the wall too early? Did you see that play this week?
He climbed the wall too early, and then he fell off really in a weird, funky way. But it was that wasn't the first time he had done that.
Yeah. So for your information, the left field, it tends to be where you just throw that guy that can't necessarily play in the field. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, he's got a great bat, and we need to put him somewhere. And left
Chris
field,
Davis of the A's.
Yeah, left field. You don't need to have a strong arm. You don't necessarily need to be a great fielder. So the left fielder for the Cardinals, right?
I think it was the Cardinals. Yeah.
So he turns around to play the ball and he gets an early jump on it and goes and climbs the wall early and perches himself on top of the wall so he can catch the home run that's going to go over it. The problem was the ball went about 5 feet short of the wall.
Right. So he's,
on
the wall.
So he's perched up on the wall waiting for the ball to go over the fence so he can try to catch it. And then it falls short. So he jumps off of the wall face first and plants his face into the
dirt. Into the warning track.
And hurts himself. Pull up that play while the adults talk baseball just watch that one. It's absolutely insane.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's baseball. Baseball is full of highlights and lowlights. I still think back to Jose Canseco and the ball bouncing
off of his head and going over
for a home run.
Oh God, I know.
So I was going to ask you, Jen. I brought you in because it's always fun to kind of go over some of the things. What are the things that happened this week in baseball that caught your attention?
Well, last night, the Mariners actually did not win. However,
They gave up two grand slams. We're still in the game.
In one game. Yeah, which was pretty amazing. And they still hit a home run. So they are on a continuous streak of breaking this record in the MLB.
Yeah, so they have
16 home runs in their first 16 games.
So I pulled it up. Do you know what the record is for at any point in the season? So right now the Mariners already set the record. It was 14.
So
they broke it two nights ago. Mm-hmm. And so now they're at 16 consecutive games with the team hitting a home run in 16 consecutive games. So they're ongoing on the streak. Did you happen to catch what the major league record was for at any point in the season?
No, what is it?
27.
Ah.
27 games. And that was by the 2002 Texas Rangers.
Okay.
The funny thing was the record that they broke, the 14, was the 2002 Cleveland Indians.
Oh.
So both records were set in the same year. So it's something to keep an eye on for the Mariners going forward.
Nice. Speaking of the Rangers, the A's, I watched the A's at the Texas Rangers last night. And if you listen carefully, when Elvis Andrews is called up to bat, his walk-up music.
Third baseman for the Texas Rangers, Elvis Andrews.
Shortstop for
the Texas Rangers, Elvis Andrews. What does he play?
Baby shark, do-do-do-do-do-do. Baby shark, do-do-do-do-do-do. That's his walk-up music. So
it's his daughter's favorite song.
It's his son's favorite song. His son is like a year old or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
So yes, it's this, insane song that every parent goes and crazy about because it's stuck in their head all the time.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So that's his walk-up music. But the fun thing about it is that Chris Davis of the A's has hit 16 home runs in 28 career games at Globe Life Park. I mean,
bananas.
He owns the Rangers and Globe Life.
And so he has, is it 10 home runs right now?
Now he's the first this year to hit 10 home runs.
So Chris Davis is funny because Chris Davis, C-H-R-I-S.
Chris Davis of the Baltimores is C.
Yeah.
KD is the A's.
So Chris Davis with a K right now leads the league in home runs.
Right.
And Chris Davis with a C in Baltimore is the longest hitless streak in Major League Baseball history.
How far is he? Going into today, he's 0-61 at the plate, dating back to September 14th of last year.
Yeah.
So he has not had a hit in 61 plate appearances.
Yeah. So you mentioned the Houston Astros beating the Mariners.
Right.
So for anybody that is just shocked by how good the Mariners are, I will
include
myself among that.
Yeah.
Here's the really shocking thing to me is I pulled up just the stats, and you have to do this periodically in baseball, and kind of one of the fun things is all of the things that you can watch. The Mariners are leading baseball in home runs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in fairness, the Mariners and the A's got an early start to the season. They played two games in Japan. The A's are number two. But the Mariners also lead Major League Baseball in batting average, slugging percentage.
Right.
They're number two in on-base percentage in all of baseball.
Right.
you've watched them a little bit.
Yeah.
Is this sustainable? They're still leading baseball in errors. They have the worst fielding percentage in baseball.
Exactly, which is not good.
Yeah.
But the other stuff, it just, I mean, so many people are saying, oh my gosh, is it too early to get really excited about this new Mariners team? Because that's always been the problem. I mean, we've talked about it so many times is that, you know, and same thing with A's fans too. We get so excited and then all of a sudden after the All-Star break, it's like, you know, they just slide.
So wait, what is it like?
Is that it? Did you guys get that? Did you get that one?
Accurate.
Okay. All right. That
smells.
We'll use that sound effect later.
Yes.
But you know, I mean, we get so excited and then, you know, our hopes are dashed at the end of the year and it's like, oh God, but everybody's just really kind of thinking on the edge of like, okay, is it too early to get excited about this new look Mariners?
Yep.
Because I mean, you know, let's face it. There are a lot of young guys that are making errors. Tim Beckham, you know, but he is, you know, knocking the ball out of the park a bunch of times. But we also have the, you know, you've got Encarnacion, which is like one of the most fun names to say in baseball. Edwin Encarnacion. And Isaiah Kiner-Falefa is also a fun name to say. He's the catcher for the Rangers. Ramon Lurian. No, you didn't. That guy, too. Yes, he threw out another guy at home plate this
week.
Why do
people run on him?
Like, don't they have scouting reports?
Yeah.
Speaking of Ramon. So, yeah, we went off. I'm sorry. We went off
you're
on
fine.
A tangent.
Go ahead. Do you give, and you're an A's fan.
Yes.
But you've watched, you know, at least 160 games of baseball most of your life.
Right. So I see the Mariners a lot because they're in the same division.
Do you give Mariners fans permission to get excited?
I do. I do. And I, you know, one of the guys here in the office, he's, you know, kind of been the same way you are. Gets his hopes up and then is like, oh, God. But, you know, yesterday he busted out his Mariners shirt. He came to work with his Mariners shirt on. I was like, I see. So now everybody's kind of like, oh, okay, let's take a look. Even though we don't know the names of the guys yet.
18 Mariners have made their team debut. They haven't even played 18 games yet.
Yeah.
And there's been, I think it's 9 position players and 9 pitchers have made their first time debut with the ball club already this year.
Yeah,
they played
great.
16 games. That's not great. That's bizarre.
I like
it. They have 27 guys on the roster.
I know.
And 18 first time as a Mariner.
First time ever. But I know I like it. It's you know, I mean, I've seen the A's quote rebuild so many times. And it's like you just see so many people that get to come up and make their debut. And that's an exciting thing to see. I love that part of baseball.
Okay.
Because, you know, if the player is lucky enough to have their family in the stands when they make their debut or when they you know make their debut on a certain team or whatever, you know, it's an exciting moment. It always gives me chills and I get tears in my eyes when like the, you know, the parents are in the stands cheering them on and stuff. I mean, that's an exciting thing too.
Okay, well, so as a Mariners fan, I will say delay your excitement, right? And so they beat the Royals in a 4-game series.
Right.
The Royals lost 10 straight or at the time
something
had lost
like
10
that,
straight
yeah.
Worst team in baseball. They beat the White Sox. This week, their game 2 against the Astros in a 3-game series. They'll finish that up tomorrow in the afternoon, which is always fun to have the afternoon games in Seattle on Sundays. They wear the cream-colored uniforms.
Yeah, that's great. I love
Indians
those.
And then Angels, and the second time they're playing the Angels. But I think if you can get through the Astros and the Indians and continue some of this momentum,
sure,
I mean, they're averaging, what, like 7.5 or almost eight runs a game.
Yes.
So if they can keep it up this weekend, win the series against the Astros, win the series against Cleveland, then you're allowed to be excited.
Yes,
but
I think so. Cautiously optimistic at this point, I think. But yeah, for sure. I think, you know, it is an exciting time, for sure. I do, you know, and like I said, I've seen the American League West a lot over the years. So I've seen the Mariners, you know, go through different players, and I've seen, you know, all that stuff too. So it's
I've seen things, man.
I've seen some things you don't want to see.
Yeah. But I think it's a good time. I think it's fun. I like it. Get excited.
I will next week. If they can beat the Indians and the Astros, I'll
cross fingers, hold breath.
Okay. Jen Ellis joining us to talk baseball once again. Thank you so much for coming in. Absolutely. We will get back into some basketball. We will do that next. But first, Will Darkins with your news update. Yes, it is. Luke Anderson, Will Darkins. Blazers finally finished the regular season. For me, I mentioned this earlier, could not wait to get to this point in the season. It's all just a culmination of really an off season, an end of last season, an off season where I don't think people saw enough moves to their satisfaction that the team was going to come out and be markedly different. They did make a couple moves at the trade deadline. They added Rodney Hood and Enes Kanter. But here they are. They've got their matchup. The first round has been a bugaboo for the Blazers for the past three seasons. They were swept the last 2 years, and I don't know if they got the matchup that everybody was hoping for. It's always funny when you get to the end of the NBA season. Who do you want to play? How do we want to match it up? Who's the team that we can beat? Well, I think a lot of people thought it was going to be the Jazz, including Terry Stotts when he rolled out six freshman guards for his final game against the Kings, and then 19-year-old Anthony Simons, leads the team back from a 28-point deficit, scores 37 points. Looks like he's the future of the Portland Trailblazers, at least in some capacity. But he may have hurt them in the short term. And instead of playing Utah, you have a matchup against OKC. Start there, Will Darkins. Do you think this is a worse matchup for the Blazers, or it probably didn't matter?
I think at the end of the day, it probably doesn't matter just because you take into circumstance with both those teams where their weaknesses are and where their leverage is, and you kind of almost think about it as even. And the only reason I say that is because, you know, we've been mentioning this all show. Paul George, he has two sore shoulders, and you know that's going to affect him, and that at some point during the series, that's going to affect Russell Westbrook because he's going to have to play hero ball, and he's going to have to take on that role that he always does in every playoff series, which he wants to think he's going to be the one that saves the team. But in the end, the only time they've ever done well, and I'm going back to his entire career with the Thunder, it's been when the entire team plays together, and most notably when him and Durant could coexist pretty well together. And the times they've been great this season, it's when he's pretty much relinquished to Paul George and said, okay, you handle the scoring load, I'll do the assists, I'll play what minimal defense I can, and we'll go from there. With the Jazz, you felt comfortable initially, but I started thinking about the matchups, and I said, I don't know who guards Rudy Gobert. I don't, and I don't know who's going to do inside scoring.
But isn't that the same thing for Steven Adams? You heard the story this week of Enes Kanter goes to New York. He's formerly played with the Oklahoma City Thunder. Him and Steven Adams are good buddies. They go out there and just start feeding the ball to Steven Adams on pick and rolls. And Steven Adams, instead of saying something to his buddy Enes Kanter, goes over to David Fizdale on the New York bench and goes, get this guy out of here. He can't guard me. We're killing him.
And you would think that, but I guess how I'm kind of comparing it is saying, well, look at the wing defense for OKC.
The wing guys?
The wing guys. I mean, consider this, that Russell Westbrook, again, he goes through this whole pattern where he feels like he has to score the entire game and then he gets exhausted on defense. So that's why I'm a little less concerned about this, because if you wear him out long enough, you actually don't have to get into the paint and get into Steven Adams as much. You can get those nice mid-range jumpers that CJ's great at. If you're shooting well on a night, I mean, you can get away with a 10 to 12 point lead and start coasting comfortably in the third quarter and give your guys rest enough for the fourth quarter where you want to actually end the game. So, I mean, I feel comfortable with it, but remember last year, we felt really good about the Pelicans in the first half.
Yeah, you're right.
We were like, oh, well, it's Anthony Davis, but I mean, whatever.
Well, Boogie's hurt. And,
Drew Holiday's not that good.
Nope.
And Rajon Rondo.
Rajon Rondo?
Whatever.
That guy's past his prime. Yeah, he's not going to do it.
Okay, whatever. He was, you know, pretty much almost got the Bulls past the first round the year before, but yeah, whatever.
Yeah, nothing's gonna change. But look where the Pelicans are now. That's the funny thing. That's kind of the irony of the NBA basketball season is you have Anthony Davis demanding a trade well out of the playoffs, have been out of the playoffs since Christmas, it feels like. You knew the Pelicans just didn't really have much hope. And here are the Blazers back in the three seed. Do you give them any credit for clawing their way through a season to get the three seed, or is it just moot?
I think it is moot because most of that middle pack, it's the same.
Is the West kind of down, though?
They're all kind of talent level the same, except for maybe the Rockets because they just kind of moved so much. I mean, there was a point in the season, I mean, in these last 15 games where the Rockets had a chance to be the two seed.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's the only one I would separate, but I'd even throw the Nuggets in with the Blazers, Spurs, Thunder, and Jazz. It's kind of like, yeah, they're all kind of 1A, 1B in a sense.
Yeah, I think the Nuggets are the biggest surprise team in the Western completely. Conference, maybe in the NBA.
And the fact that they're such a great offensive team, which you wouldn't think that just with Jokic, that you know, he's such a great inside defensive presence. But going to the Better You Today text line 55305, somebody asks, is there a way to hide Kanter on defense in a zone so Westbrook only shoots outside the entire series?
Yeah, put in Zach Collins. I mean, honestly, yeah. Right? I mean,
what Jason Quick was alluding to on primetime.
Yeah, well, and obviously you're going to need some inside scoring. You want to take some of the pressure off of, Dame and CJ. And if you can get easy buckets in the paint, Enes Kanter is going to be great for that. So you wonder what they'll do with the rotation of it. But I think, yeah, you rotate in different guys to help him on defense. It's not necessarily hiding him. It's just choosing the spots where you put him in. And maybe he's on a short leash, and if they start, you know, going after that matchup with Steven Adams, you just have a quick hook. Get Zach Collins out there. Get Myers Leonard out there. He's got 6 fouls. Go and do something. The other things I wonder is how much you're going to try to get under the skin of a team that, I mean, it's tough because Yusuf Nurkić was a big part of it. He's a guy that I think can get under people's skin.
I mean, he was the point of consternation in that whole series in the regular season. I mean, the last game of that regular season series, It's centered on Yusuf Nurkić getting into these brawls.
But who else has a tendency towards that? It's Enes Kanter. So you wonder if he'll be going and doing it. We've seen Myers Leonard go out and mix it up with people.
Oh.
Zach Collins. It's not the same thing. I'm not saying it is. But are the Blazers going to look at that and use it as a tactic? Russell Westbrook, like you said, has a tendency to play hero ball, but he also has a tendency to get emotionally mixed up in those little squabbles. And Damian Lillard and CJ aren't the guys to go and do that. It was Yusuf Nurkić, but Enes Kanter has a tendency towards that. Zach Collins hasn't backed down from anybody all year. And remember a few years ago when Myers and Boogie got into it, is somebody else willing to pick up that mantle? Was it something that was intentional, or is it just Yusuf Nurkic's personality? I don't know. So that's something that I'll be really curious about in this matchup and where that goes.
The other thing from the text line, 55305, better you today text line, somebody suggesting double Paul George, live with the rest of OKC. I don't know if you have to do that just considering his injury status right now. I think, you know, in a playoff series, one of the best things that you can do as a team is basically say, okay, let's feel this team out and see who they are right now, because teams honestly do change once you get to the playoffs.
For sure.
Strategy changes, personnel changes, and, you know, Suk says it all the time, which is the regular season is about rotation and depth. Once you get into the playoffs, who's the most talented? Yeah. What kind of talent do you have to work with? What kind of raw talent is going to get you through a game 5 where, like, you need this win to go back home so you feel comfortable?
Yeah. I don't know. It's going to be a very interesting series. I'm very excited. Tips off tomorrow at 12:30 at Moda Center. So certainly check. It's ABC is the channel on your television, a dial. Well, that's another thing I'll teach kids about. There used to be a dial on your television. Once upon a time, that was a thing.
What do you think the pregame's going to be for that? Or, I'm sorry, the lineup thing, because you know the Blazers have done this the past couple of years in the playoffs for the lineups. They like do a special video, or they do something where the crowd gets.
I think you have Yusuf. If he's not in the arena, he's on tape.
Oh, really? Now?
Yeah. I mean, I think you have him come and kind of get a little pumped up,
like him on the big screen, like yelling at people in broken English.
Absolutely.
Everybody get pumped up.
Well, I'll get into this in what to watch, but there's something that I'm looking for in this series, and I think Yusuf Nurkić is part of a bigger story around this Blazers team and this season's approach to it. So we'll talk about that next.
Oh, my, my, my.
Oh, my, my, my. In what to watch, that is a segment where we tell you what to watch. It's fairly cleverly named, and it is next right here on 1080 The Fan.
Which is the most exciting matchup in the field of competition? Which game will leave you kicking yourself if you miss it? Which channel should you switch to when the sporting day is gone? Welcome to America's most exciting sports talk radio show segment. It's time for What to Watch. Presented by Encore Audio Video. Now hear this. Whether you're looking for a new TV or a custom home theater, start at Encore Showroom at 14th and Everett in the Pearl. Now our expert panel, avid television viewer Will Darkins, and increasingly out-of-touch father of twin girls, Luke Anderson, are here to tell you what to watch. Literally, it's What to Watch on The Sinner and the Saint. On 1080 The Fan.
All right, we bring you What to Watch. It is one of the most anticipated weekends in sports. You've got the Masters. We're in the flow of baseball season. You've got Game of Thrones. But it's also the kickoff to the NBA playoffs. I kind of know where you're going to go with this, and it's probably going to be Blazers. Before we do that, since we're wrapping up the show, I want to mention that this segment is brought to you by Encore Audio Video. If you need a home theater, home automation, just looking for an upgrade of the equipment you already have, or you're looking for controls that are a lot easier to use, go see the guys at Encore Audio Video, 14th and Everett in the Pearl. Will Darkins, what are you watching this weekend?
Well, of course, the Masters. No,
looking for that drum circle.
Inside of sports and inside of game one with the Trailblazers and Oklahoma City Thunder, I am going to watch Seth Curry.
Really?
Yes, I am, because he is going to be our bench scoring man.
Is that going to be his official title?
Yeah, just like Wing Guy.
When Seth Curry shows up on the screen and they'll have his name, and then his position will be bench scoring person.
Man.
Yeah.
No, I mean, with Yusuf Nurkic obviously out, you know, that's a huge part of your offense in the starting five that you're going to miss. And so, you know, conceivably you're going to put Enes Kanter out there to start. And you're going to rotate in Zach Collins at times, maybe Myers like you've predicted, just to kind of toss things up a little bit, throw some defense in there. But, you know, it's going to be hard not to put CJ and Dame on the floor at the same time, because the strategy that was used last year by the Pelicans was just double them, they'll get rid of the ball, and then nobody else is going to score. Yep. Well, if you have two of them on the floor at the same time, you can't double two people. So you're going to have Seth Curry come in at a certain point.
What if they did? I mean, just run four guys out on the perimeter, and then one guy takes care of the other three.
I don't know. Just give it to Steven, Al, man.
Steven Adams shuts down Kanter and Harkless and Aminu.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to have Seth Curry come off the bench and obviously score some points and shoot really well. And, you know, I think he's going to be a major key in this for the Blazers to, I don't know, not only hang around but win the series.
So obviously we're both watching the Blazers game. I think that kind of goes without saying. I don't know what it's going to look like. This is a really difficult thing for me, but what I'm looking for is the halo effect of Damian Lillard. So Dame, at the end of last season, came out and set his goal, and there was an article, and I wish I could give credit to the guy that put it together, but it was talking in depth on what Damian's Lillard goal was for the offseason, and that was to... He's established himself as an NBA superstar. He wanted to figure out how he makes his team better. He needed to be better in the playoffs. He admitted that, but he also needed to kind of get that same fire that he has and instill that in the rest of his team. Seth Curry had an article, and I think this was Jason Quick that was talking about it, where the moment that he really took things to the next level this year was when Dame pulled him aside and said, "Hey, listen. You need to be aggressive. Your shot is not going to be designed in this offense. That's not your role. You need to create your own shot. You need to be confident in your shot. And you go out there and start being more aggressive. You're going to be a huge factor in this team." It's been well documented, the relationship between Dame and Nurkic, and how Dame has been a mentor to Yusuf and making sure that he shows up focused to every single game. We saw it the other night. Anthony Simons said, you know, part of the thing that you know, held his head high when they were down 28 and felt like he can go out and do it was Dame pulled him aside and said, "Hey, listen, you've got this. You've got the talent to do it." The effect that Damian Lillard has on this team and the team's confidence. Enes Kanter and Rodney Hood both said independently that they had other offers that may have been more money and may have been better. They both wanted to come to Portland. I know those aren't the free agent signings that we praise across the NBA, but we also have said for a very long time that the Portland Trail Blazers can't draw free agents to it. These are good players. They're not great players, but I want to see what effect Damian Lillard, how he shows up and how he plays and how he affects the rest of his team. I'm not sure exactly how you watch for it, but that's what I'm going to be looking for and see if there's signs of that.
Dude, you got to watch to have him take over the game here.
Yeah.
And I mean, first 5 minutes of the game, he needs to be aggressive. I know that his style usually in most games is to kind of defer and get other people involved in anything. But, dude, this is the playoffs. We've said it over and over and over again. Talent is going to win in the playoffs.
Yep.
Make your presence known immediately and just freaking go at it, dude.
Yeah. What are you watching outside sports?
3:30, Ugly Truth with Katherine Heigl and Gerard Butler. This is a weird movie.
It's a hot air balloon movie, isn't it?
No, this is not. Well, at the end, it's not a hot air balloon themed movie. Because that's how you asked that. You were like, this is a movie about people in hot air balloons.
Hey, but if you watch long enough, you'll see a hot air balloon.
You will, yeah. This is apparently the movie that lost Katherine Heigl, like, work.
Yeah.
She was a nightmare on set, and people were like, yeah, I'm never hiring her.
Yeah, yeah, they went the wrong direction. And Gerard Butler is a romantic interest. We'll see about that. Untold History, I'm getting more and more into it. The next episode is about the A-bomb and the end of World War II. Very excited to watch that. It's Oliver Stone on Netflix. Check it out. All right, big weekend of sports. Everybody enjoy. Whatever happens, we'll talk about it next week. Big thanks to Jen Ellis for joining us. Will Darkins, as always. If you missed anything, download the Les Schwab Tires podcast at 1080thefan.com. NBA right here on The Fan later today, so stay tuned. We're done. Bye-bye.
Give the audience a grin. Enjoy it. It's your last chance anyhow.
So always look on the bright side of death.
Ramon Lurion, no you didn't.
KD, you cheese butt. Where LeBron at? KD, LeBron, he gon' yam on you.
Code Red.
Juice.
Wow. You know, I'm gonna watch Norbit.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.